Chinese tourists have not returned to these countries. So the number are still much, much lower than expected.
There's a lot more of domestic tourism push because of the price. When I went to Hainan and Sanya, retail was, you know, up. You can see the numbers. People are shopping. So they were getting similar experiences from east to west of China. And so that's why there's a lot of like, how do you, you know, leverage a lot of Chinese out now from this domestic tourism, because that has been reinforced for 3 years.
It's not only about the expense. You could have the best multi-billion dollar marketing campaign in America to win back Chinese tourists, but it's not going to be fully effective if Chinese people believe that they'll be met with a cold shoulder or worse, that they'll be met with violence or be caught in the crossfire of guns, battles and things like that, that America is unfortunately, sadly, known for.
The Chat Lounge.
Chat Lounge.
Chat Lounge.
The Chat Lounge unpacks views and opinions on hot issues in a more casual way.
Welcome to the Chat Lounge. I'm Tu Yuan. Joining our discussion on the dwindling number of outbound Chinese tourists are Harvey Zoden, Senior Fellow at the Center for China and Globalization, Dr. Haiyan Song, Mr. and Mrs. Chan Chak Fu Professor in International Tourism, Associate Dean and Chair Professor, School of Hotel and Tourism Management, Hong Kong Polytechnic University, and Dr. Glenn McCartney, Associate Professor in Integrated Resort and Tourism Management, University of Macau. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. So airline executives, tourism officials, and luxury store owners in America and Europe have been disappointed as Chinese travelers, once the biggest spenders on overseas trips, are drawing back from visiting those regions. So take the United States as an example. Data from Statista show that last year, just 850,000 Chinese visitors entered the United States, although this was more than double the 2022 numbers. It remained substantially lower than the 2.8 million visitors welcomed in 2019. So I'm going to start with Harvey. Have you observed similar scenarios in your city or the region or your country, Austria, you're now living in, and the whole region, Europe, maybe?
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm sitting in a train station right now in Vienna. Mm-hmm. I came here on purpose to see what I could discern about tourism. And I don't see many Asians at all here. And the ones, the few that I see, look like they live here. And so I have seen in the center of Vienna as well, where most of the tourists head to, very few tourists and even fewer Asians. It's certainly much better than a year ago, but it's nothing like pre-COVID. So I believe that we have a long way to go. And I can tell you from talking to merchants here, from hoteliers, from restaurant operators, that they're dying. They really depended on Chinese and Asian tourism, and it hasn't come back. So it's a very, very difficult time here. And I'm observing, because I was in several other countries in Europe recently, that tourism has not come back yet. And it's a major factor now. And I hope with time that this will get better and better.
Mm. So it's not just Chinese tourists. It's all tourists from Asia. The number is decreasing.
And right not now. Only Asia. Yeah, it's all tourists. It's tourists who are from other parts of Europe. It's tourists who are even further away, because it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell where people are from. Asians are a little bit easier, and Africans are a little bit easier. But I can tell you the numbers are not back. And certainly I've looked online and consulted various databases, and the tourist numbers are just not back. They're better, but they're not best. They're not equal to what they were before COVID.
Mm, fair enough. But let's focus on Chinese tourists. And Haiyan, you were in Hong Kong. Were you aware of more or fewer mainland tourists visiting your city or Southeast Asian countries over the past year?
Yes, actually, When the border opened early 2023, we expect an influx of Chinese tourists to Hong Kong. And we thought at that time the city would be recovered to pre-COVID-19 level in terms of inbound tourists, but this did not happen. So we actually, over last year, we received about 40 million tourists, but pre-COVID was around 70 million. So it is still a long way to go. So, we actually have been doing a forecasting project lately. We forecast Hong Kong will return to pre-COVID level by the end of 2025, i.e. next year. So I guess in other countries within Asia Pacific will see a similar pattern. So the Chinese tourists have not returned to these countries. So the number are still much, much lower than expected.
Mm. What about in Macau? Glenn, is it hard to tell who are from the mainland, or is it the situation similar in your city?
Macau is a little bit different in that regard. Macau basically is 70% of our visitation is from mainland. So if something impacts from mainland, we really will feel that. But this year, we sort of rebounded to about 70% of pre-COVID numbers from mainland. So we got about 19 million. Hong Kong got about 27 million. So between the Hong Kong and Macau, we sort of make up 48 million, over half of outbound Chinese. So Macau and Hong Kong are actually a very good case study of understanding what's going to happen in the regional and then international. So you can see like what's going to happen this year, next year, sort of by looking at what's happening in Hong Kong and Macau and some of the visitor trends, some of the bottlenecks, which I'm sure we're going to talk about now, and some of the other issues that are, you know, that you haven't seen this rebound as quick. But from Macau, we have sort of rebound back. We're sort of to 70% of what we were, and the numbers are looking good. In that regard. But I think there's something I'd like to add to that. We never closed during COVID in 2022 and 2021. So even last year, we have a travel corridor with mainland. I was traveling to mainland in that time too. We had about 5 million. So even though it's a little bit, we still have a little bit of visitation.
So it seems Macau is doing better than other cities or other regions, because you said it regained some 70% of the number recorded prior to the pandemic, right? And according to the Bloomberg report, in other places, it's like only, I think it's their airlines only bounced back to some 60% of the pre-pandemic level, right?
That is correct. But Macau, see, we get about 50% of our visitation cross-border from Guangdong and Guangzhou areas.
Right.
So the airline industry, the impact is less felt in places like Macau and Hong Kong in that regard, because a lot of our visitation is southern China. So regionally, internationally, the airlines is an issue for getting back outbound Chinese.
Right. And we saw this article on carried by Bloomberg reporting the pullback in Chinese tourists has raised nearly $130 billion from global tourism. I can't imagine how big it is to an industry of billions of billions of dollars. So, Glenn, can you help us understand how big such a loss is?
Well, because the travel and tourism industry impacts many sectors, that's how they sort of do the multiplier effect. The industry goes beyond aviation, cruise, restaurants, and it trickles right down to the suppliers, where you're supplying furniture, food, beverage, and so forth. So the industry is, if you look, you know, in my regard, we rate it as the top industry in the world because it goes into many sectors. And I think that figure is sort of looking at the multiplier effect of the multi-billion dollar industry that we represent that trickles down into many other industries that are directly or indirectly impacted by us.
Right. I remember Harvey just mentioned the hotel operators in Austria kind of dying. Haiyan, what's the situation in Hong Kong?
Actually, in Hong Kong, we are also recovered around 60 to 65% so far. So in Hong Kong, the hotel industry are doing better. So we now actually the occupancy rate on average is 80%, but pre-COVID-19 is more than 90%. But of course, still there are room to improve. So in terms of hotel sector, not too bad. But in terms of retail sector, and it suffered quite a bit. Quite a lot of retail shops has been closed because tourism coming to Hong Kong not doing shopping as it did in the past. So yeah, retail sector suffered a bit. That's the situation here.
Mm. Then worldwide, which countries or regions do you, according to your research, suffer the most? The United States, the UK, or Thailand, or Japan, South Korea, Haiyan?
In terms of Chinese tourists?
Yes.
Mm. Right, okay. I think, of course, Europe and America, they are the biggest losers, I would think, in terms of Chinese tourist visit. This is because of various reasons. One is from an economics perspective, three factors actually influence this sudden drop. First, we know the income level of tourists is a main driver of long-haul travel. But actually, the Chinese economy has not been doing as well before. So the income level of Chinese have not increased that much over the last year after COVID-19. And also the travel cost to these long-haul destinations at least double or even triple in terms of airfares. So the price played another negative force, you know, push back tourists traveling from China to these long-haul destinations. And thirdly, the substitution. We say because of the travel cost is so high to international destinations, so the Chinese tourists actually substitute the long-haul destination for short-hauls. So they stay within China doing domestic tourism or surrounding countries and regions. So these are the three economic factors actually push back the Chinese outbound tourism. Of course, another factor which influences Chinese tourists traveling to America and Europe is the geopolitics. So because we've seen lately, there's so much negativity towards China and towards Chinese economy and Chinese citizens. So that's why a lot of Chinese tourists think, you know, I spend a lot of money traveling to your country and buying things and I'm still discriminated against. Why should I travel to these destinations? So this is another non-economic factor. So I think all this together affected the Chinese tourists to these countries and regions.
Mm. Then, Glenn, do you share similar observation? And according to your research, which countries or regions are the biggest losers in terms of Chinese tourists?
Yeah, I have to agree with Hainan and everything that he's saying there. The price sensitivity right now in the Chinese economy and what Chinese travelers look for are very budget conscious. But maybe to add more to what Hainan is saying there, when I was traveling to mainland during COVID restrictions, I went to Hainan, I went to East Guangdong. And what I seen was a lot more domestic tours. Obviously, for those two, three years, there was a lot of domestic travel, getting to know other provinces, etc. And there's great packages being pushed in hotel resorts. So I experienced that. And when I was staying at the hotel resort in East Guangdong during COVID restrictions, it was really busy. People were rediscovering, as you know, in domestic tourism. And so there's a lot more domestic tourism pushed to Hainan's messaging there because of the price. But also they realize they get a lot of experiences they realized during COVID in China. So retail in Hainan, when I went to Hainan and Sanya, it was, you know, retail was, you know, up. You can see the numbers. People are shopping. So they were getting similar experiences because from east to west of China. And so that's why there's a lot of like, how do you now, you know, leverage a lot of Chinese out now from this domestic tourism? Because that has been reinforced for 3 years. And a lot of beautiful, I said, in a beautiful resort on a beach in China. And, you know, they were, you know, that they can experience overseas. So that is also part of the puzzle of other destinations around the world of like, you know, how do we now attract based upon price, for example, and also because these are similar experiences that they can get now and have during the COVID lockdown.
So you're saying that those countries like America or some European countries, the tourism operators, they haven't come up with any good solution, you know, to win back the Chinese tourists who have found that maybe it's more economical to travel inside China.
No, well, I'm just saying that, well, that's part, there's several things, as Hanyan said, was there, external and internal. And I think one of the things that we have to touch on is that domestic tourism has been really reinforced the last few years.
Indeed.
And so for, And the travel industry globally is always challenged about how do you brand your city and bring in, you know, for a piece of that tourism pie. And so that just has got a little bit more harder about a destination image issue of branding and pushing people to your destination and coming up with new ideas, new products, and making it value for money for the traveler. So, and the traveler actually, I think, is another thing we'll talk about later, is, for example, some of the new generation that's on the move, and, you know, how their experiences and their motives are starting to change somewhat, and how to link more into that, for example, the Generation Z traveler.
Indeed. And to Harvey, as an non-expert in tourism business, what's your observation there when it comes to, you know, the major causes of the decline in Chinese tourists abroad?
Well, you know, in real estate, they say the major factor is location, location, location. But I think in the tourism industry, it's multifaceted. But the bottom line in many ways is price, price, price. And so the foreign travel is very expensive now. But it's not only about the expense. It's about the fact that there aren't as many nonstop flights as there were before. It's about how welcoming the country and its people are. You could have the best multi-billion dollar marketing campaign in America to win back Chinese tourists, but it's not going to be fully effective if Chinese people believe that they'll be met with a cold shoulder or worse, that they'll be met with violence or be caught in the crossfire of guns, battles and things like that, that America is unfortunately, sadly known for. So it's a multifaceted problem, and it just can't be quickly fixed or easily fixed by a marketing campaign or just by dropping prices. If you drop prices to zero, there would still be other negative factors that would hold people back, especially now with the domestic tourism in China increasing, as we've just discussed. The fact is that Chinese people are going to be conditioned to go more and more to China and explore this beautiful country, because you can't explore China in a few seasons. There's so much to do. It's such a big country, and there's so much natural beauty and cultural beauty and historic beauty. So whether you're talking about seasoned travelers or young people who are just getting started, they're going to say, why do I have to hassle with customs and immigration and passports and all this kind of thing when I can go to a place like Hainan and do duty-free shopping, for example? So I think that there's many moving parts here. It's kind of like three-dimensional chess in a way.
You're listening to The Chat Lounge. When we come back, where have the missing Chinese tourists gone?
Dunhuang. Situated along the ancient Silk Road, where fine arts and divine beliefs merged with the natural world. It's where the East and West interacted, and where the world's largest Buddhist art gallery still fascinates and amazes people today. A place where stories of life and death, love and hatred, passion and desire, faith and sacrifice have been generated and told for 2,000 years. Buckle up for our new podcast, Why We Love Dunhuang, the one and only podcast that can take you to the fantasy world of Dunhuang and beyond through our audio tour. Listen and subscribe for free on major podcast platforms. Why We Love Dunhuang? You will have your answers.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Chat Lounge, and we're discussing the missing Chinese tourists in global tourism. Like you said, prices play a very important role in people's decision where they want to go. But while those European countries or American countries are witnessing a decreased number of Chinese tourists, some countries in the Middle East and also in Africa, like South Africa, have seen an increase in the number of Chinese tourists. And I think the prices in countries like Qatar or Saudi Arabia are not so low, or things are not so cheap there, right? So, Glenn, is it more economical to travel in those regions, or what have led to such an increase, in, according to the Bloomberg report, in the number of Chinese tourists to those regions?
I would have to look at some of the specifics, but to the point of it's not just price. I think if we were all like looking at, you know, the marketing thing about price, you know, if not necessarily, of course, price is a big issue. People look at their budget and they look at their 5-day trip and they'll factor in that. But of course, there is outbound Chinese traveling, and that will increase, I'm quite confident, as the year goes by. So it's not just price. So there's other things that have been, as for example, Macau came out of COVID in January last year. We had many bottlenecks, human resource bottlenecks, getting our ferries and our flights back up again. You know, people, we did have getting the people back, you know, getting the numbers of flight. That takes time to get transportation modes up. And still we have a little bit of that bottlenecking. So to the point of like number of flights, getting more of the logistics in place. So that might be one of the factors behind it as well. Get ramping up after COVID takes some time. And as we can see, there has been a sort of a lagging effect there too, as we try to get people need passports, people need visas, people need airline ticket seats. So there's a lot of that would be probably part of the issue of getting people outbound Chinese going as well. So it's not just about price, I believe. It's also, and what Harvey was saying, the image and the branding is very important, and that's all shared on social media in China. I've seen that. People are very, you know, the messaging and the communication is shared a lot in social media in China. So that messaging gets out and people make decisions on it.
Yeah, in tourism academics, we talk about guests and host relationships. I think if host receiving guests with a great, friendly and good attitude, and then the tourists will come back again and again. So I think that's also play a role. And in addition, in Middle East countries, including Saudi Arabia, recently they have invested a lot of money in developing tourism infrastructure and also campaigns and also marketing, branding. I think this actually also play a very important role in attracting Chinese tourists to these countries.
Mm. Harvey, what's your observation?
As I said, it's a multi-factor problem. If you want to talk about countries like Saudi Arabia and the Middle East, the wonderful thing about them are that people are very welcoming, and also that you have a wide range of options from the very, very high end to more economical. So I think we have to look at the big picture. It's not only price. Price is a major factor, but it's how comfortable people feel, how welcome they feel, and also if they're going to be safe in those destinations. It's a very big problem. It's not going to be very easy to solve. It's going to take time. One marketing campaign or one smile or 1,000 smiles are not going to do it.
Yes, you said safety is a very important factor to consider. But what about Africa? From media, we've learned a lot of crimes like robberies or shootings in some countries, I should say, in Africa. But Chinese tourists to that continent also go up. So what's the reason there, Harvey?
Well, I think there's a lot of friendship between Africa and China, and people look very favorably on Africa. But you're right. Some places in Africa, that takes many places in South Africa, for example, are not very safe. And it's not that they may be targets of crime, the Chinese visitors, although they could be, but they could just be caught in the crossfire of other people's violence, which is a very bad thing as well. So they have something going for them, and that's friendship. But they also have to increase and improve their safety and tourism infrastructure for people. They have to have more tourist police. They have to have more ways that people can feel safer. And so the word of mouth can improve gradually by Chinese people who've been there, and also the comments on online social media and so on.
Mm, indeed. And actually, the two experts in tourism business have touched upon the change of Chinese consumers' consumption pattern. Glenn and Haiyan, could you please elaborate a little bit more? How have preferences and consumption patterns of Chinese overseas travelers changed over the past 3 or 4 years? Sure. And how have they affected the landscape of the tourism industry?
Maybe I give one case study. Just happened this week in Macau. We had a concert caught by 17, the Korean pop band. and they had it in their stadium here in Macau. And over 2 days, we've seen 40,000 very young female ladies about on the early 20s come to Macau, I think mostly from mainland. 40,000. And the ticket price was well over 200 US, I guessing, you know, and some of those tickets. So spending, I live in a small part called Taipa, and the place was absolutely buzzing for 3 or 4 days of all these fans coming over. And they're all Generation Z, and they're going shopping, and all the small businesses in their island were very, very happy with all this, the numbers coming into the restaurants and stuff. So to the point of price, sure, is one thing, but, you know, we have to add, what if we have the Generation Z on the move, and sure, social media and the use of their phones is very important, how they share on WeChat and all the other social media platforms. But I think very important about Generation Z and what is happening after a post-COVID. One behavioral thing is people want more experiences out of the holidays than they did maybe a decade ago. So sure, events, shows, concerts, culture, arts, and so forth. They all have to be, it's not just shopping, not just eating, but there's a lot more value to the holiday that they want, more experience that they want. So I think that's also got a thing that we need to look at much more in the future, is how do we address some of the, you know, the moving trends and motives and behaviors of the outbound Chinese, particularly the younger generation that do have money to spend, but are looking at different things to spend it on and adding more value to their travel experiences.
Yeah, just follow Glenn's comments. Actually, recently we have done two pieces of research. One is looking at retail tourism. Another one is look at the Chinese tourist willingness to pay for carbon emission reduction, things like that. I think you will find younger Chinese tourists now become more conscientious about environmental sustainability when they travel. So when they travel to a destination, if they buy things, if they purchase retail goods, they probably will look at whether this local produce, whether it is produced in a sustainable manner, things like that. They also are willing to offset their carbon emissions when they flying to different destinations. So I think that's something we have to pay attention to in the future, especially the industry, when they develop new product and services, and they should actually pay much attention on these attributes of the products. In Hong Kong, for example, in the past, tourists coming to Hong Kong mainly for shopping, dining, maybe, you know, go to the theme parks and things like that. But now actually many young Chinese who come to Hong Kong for hiking, they discover, you know, Hong Kong, 70% are green land, right? So they actually go to different places for hiking. So you can see these are some of the behavioral changes.
Indeed. And from my observation, I also noticed the psychological factor of a younger generation or Gen Z, because one of my friends who's born after 2000, he told me that, you know, out of this sense of patriotism, and if he can enjoy tourism services of same quality as he can have overseas, why doesn't he spend the money inside the country? So, Glenn, have you noticed such kind of psychological factors when you study the case of Gen Z?
Yes, I mean the issue of safety is very important, but the issue, like Hanyan says, they're going for hikes, you know, in the green and going for hikes. So there's a little bit of a call. They want experience more. The safe image is absolutely very, very important. I can't agree more with Harvey's saying in the psychological aspect of that. But to my point is domestic tourism has grown, and like to your point, they can experience in the home territory. There's a possibility they will stay. But to the point where we experience in Macau and Hong Kong, they're crossing the borders into the two SARs and are experiencing other things when they're here. Macau, of course, has a Portuguese culture dating back, you know, 300 or 400 years, and they come over and experience the food and the dining. So they wish to have a different aspect of their travel by coming to Macau, and they have that, they can flavor that East and West perspective in Macau. And that's one of the reasons why Macau does its marketing campaigns as well, this East meets West. And so they come over the border. I see them going to the little Portuguese Macanese restaurants for the food, and they're going to some of the cultural hotspots as well, the old temples and churches and architecture, and they're exploring all of that. We do not have the number amount of greenery that Hong Kong would have, but we have other things that they do seek out when they're here in Macau. And so they're looking for something different as well.
That said, I'm wondering whether Hong Kong and Macau kind of enjoy relationship of competitors or cooperators, because, you know, Hong Kong and Macau, to some mainlanders, they're sort of similar destinations.
Maybe I should have added a little bit more to that. Something we've seen in our research over the years, the issue of familiarity is so important as well. What does that mean? Language, culture. So, you know, when I went to many countries overseas, and I have some of the cities, they had signage done in Chinese, Mandarin speakers. They had some, you know, Chinese restaurants offering some types of home food. That's been very important. The familiarity that Hong Kong and Macau has is a benefit, because people can come here and they can speak Mandarin and they can have home food. And that's, yeah, is very important still too, to the Chinese outbound, is the level of familiarity, where it be language and food and so forth. That still is a very important aspect.
Haiyan, what's your answer?
Yeah, Hong Kong and Macau are not competing destinations. We consider Macau and Hong Kong are complementary to each other. So actually, people, if they visit Hong Kong very often, with a very high possibility, they will visit Macau as well, especially international tourists. When they come to Hong Kong, certainly they will visit Macau because we offer quite a different set of products and services. So they want to experience more. So we consider Hong Kong and Macau are complementary. So in that sense, we are not consider Macau as a competing destination. So that's why we get along very well. Glenn, is that right?
Oh, yes, indeed. I've been to Hong Kong a few times this month already. So I enjoy the tourism in Hong Kong, because it's quite different in that aspect too. It has I go down the central area and also over to the Tsim Sha Tsui. So I enjoy my trips to Hong Kong, as I'm sure Hainan comes over here a few times.
I'm going to Macau next week.
So we have, of course, the bridge now, which that bridge has become a very important. The infrastructural thing is very obvious about how Macau, Hong Kong, the Greater Bay Area have now been all very connected physically through this infrastructure, trains and roads and bridges, and that all facilitates and also the technology that goes with that. That people can cross borders with a lot of ease now, you know, using fingerprints, get through border checks and so forth. So getting people across quicker and with great ease has also helped our traffic in terms of flows as well. And so when we came out of COVID, these were all in place to help.
Good to see Hong Kong and Macau get along. And to Haiyan, then, how long do you expect this trend or situation to last? I mean, you know, Chinese tourists drawing back from overseas destinations?
Actually, it really depends the economic conditions first, and how the Chinese economy will be developing, and also other destinations as well. Remember, inflation is a major issue in the US and in Europe. So that's why when tourists arrive in the destinations, they find everything's so expensive. Actually, I travel to Europe once or twice every year. I find, you know, the accommodation there is so expensive. So I think inflation is a main thing. I think when the Chinese economy fully recovered with good growth potential, and also the inflation is controlled, probably situation improve, the tourism will return. So I will guess probably within next 2 or 3 years if everything under control. But if there's another war somewhere, you never know.
Harvey, what's your observation?
Well, I think that the outbound tourism will return maybe in the next few years, but I don't think it's going to return right away, because people want to be sure there's not going to be another pandemic wherever it comes from. They want to be safe health-wise. They also want to be in environments that are friendly to them. And some of this takes a profound marketing, and also in a expression of people and countries to other countries, that their visitors from those countries are welcome, and that they'll be treated well, they'll be treated with respect. So I hope that there are no unforeseen events which will change the trend of the return of tourism. But let's face it, nobody in 2019 could have predicted COVID. And so we just hope, we pray, that there's not another, let's call it, black swan event that puts a monkey wrench into the whole picture, because
Indeed.
We need more tourism.
Indeed, actually, I think the United Nations World Tourism Organization is much more optimistic than you are. They expect global tourism to fully recover actually this year and expect the Chinese market to soar. Glenn, are you so optimistic?
I'm on this call with Professor Hanyan, and I never like to go against the forecaster so well. I can't. So, Hanyan will put me in my place if he's for forecasting models. But one thing is very important, I think, for Macau has been, and it's very difficult to do, I understand, is investment in tourism is very important. The CapEx, the capital expenditure. So throughout COVID, Macau continued to build accommodation. And so we have more, you know, inventory came on the market. But that means, for example, Macau now is number one in the world for Forbes luxury hotels. I think 23 recognized, and their price point is very good. Of course, destinations are saying, well, we don't have the money, and we're trying to bring back tourists. But at one side, you're saying we should be investing, and the other side, we don't have the same revenues. But, that has been a factor, you know, that we have to look at in the future, that you have to reinvest, you have to get investors, you know, to renovate your industry, to rejuvenate your industry in some aspects. So there'll be some clever innovations and entrepreneurs out there to see what they can do with the minimal capital they have got, because that's very important to put a new shine on what you have to invest, I guess, is very important. That's what Macau has been doing during COVID and has been successful, because we had new properties that came online after COVID. And that gives another reason why you should be visiting, just come and see some of the new hotel properties and some of the new other tourism infrastructure.
I guess those industry operators, they wouldn't hesitate when it comes to more investment. But I guess what they are concerned is that what if they invest a lot, but the consumption pattern or the inclination of the Chinese tourists have already changed what they can do. Is that possible?
I think we still probably continue the constraints of growth, right? So remember, beginning you mentioned the airline capacity has not returned to normal yet, right? Mm-hmm. For Hong Kong airlines like Cathay Pacific, it's only 60%. Or less than 70% of capacity recovery. And also labor is another major constraint. During the COVID, many employees in the tourism hospitality industry have left the industry. So it is very difficult to get them to return to the hospitality and tourism industry. So you have to looking for new employees if there's a new business is stuck. So I think these are the two main constraints which will slow down the recovery of tourism, not only Chinese tourists, but also tourists from other countries or regions. If they want to visit China, for example, visit Asia Pacific, that's an airline constraint. So I think that's something that I'm not as optimistic as the UNWTO forecast. I think the UNWTO forecast was done maybe mid last year. I think they may have revised their forecast by now. But in terms of investment, I think the industry people are very... They will not invest until they see the real recovery, right? So I think that's why they are looking at the forecast generated by the UNWTO and also by PATA and also universities. So they assess whether they should invest or not. I think this is something that they will be careful.
The Chat Lounge. The Chat Lounge unpacks views and opinions on hot issues in a more casual way.
Glenn, what's your response? I know Macau wouldn't have to worry about this, but operators in other regions or countries.
Yeah, I have to agree that, you know, at this point, you know, Macau is a little bit different because of the revenues we create. For example, we have the gaming industry and so forth. So that in itself creates a lot of revenue for being able to spend. But so people, there's a level of caution right now, looking at statistics and data ahead. Obviously, spending will be less because we want, you know, they want to see the recovery in full swing. So there has to be a little bit of innovation, I think, in the industry to think about, you know, how can we then innovate given the constraints we have? So that, you know, how do we come up with a tourism strategy? To me, it's about looking how to go back to our plans, or, you know, all our NTOs or national tourism offices, and work with local suppliers and industry and see what we can do, what we have. And how do we do, for example, the event industry, sporting events, entertainment events? What can we do, what we have at the moment, put together attractive packages, given some of the points we've been discussing in the show so far?
And once China's outbound tourism business picks up, like you projected, in about 2 or 3 years, which countries or regions do you expect to be the first to benefit? Haiyan?
Yeah, Macau, certainly. Macau actually already benefited tremendously. Hong Kong, yeah, actually, we are not doing as well as Macau, because Macau is expected to return to normal, to a pre-COVID level by the end of the year or early next year, but Hong Kong probably by the end of next year. I think this is a couple of reasons for that. One is that Macau has never closed, as Glenn mentioned before, to the mainland tourists, right? So they continually visit Macau. Maybe a couple of times the border was closed, but then most of the time, actually, Macau was still open to mainland tourists. So that's why there's a continuation of tourist flows to Macau. But Hong Kong has closed for 3 years, no tourists from the mainland. And then actually another reason is that, in 2019, there was unrest, right? So some mainland tourists, when they are in Hong Kong, somehow they were, discriminated against. Now there's still some perceived risk or concerns before they visit Hong Kong. So until this is overcome, mainland tourists were reluctant to visit Hong Kong.
Glenn,
but eventually this will disappear, yes.
Right. Glenn, what would be your choice?
Just to add to Haiyan's, I think it'll be regional success, which we're seeing already.
All right.
And you'll see some regional successes because it's short haul packages, promotions done by tour operators and so forth will be all part of that mix. So you'll see other cities around the region, whether it be Singapore, Japan, South Korea, Thailand and so forth. I think you can start taking the boxes in some of these regional countries that will benefit, because before COVID they were popular. And I think some of the things we mentioned there before about branding, promotions, making it easier, visa-free, and how the tourism offices and promote the destinations towards the outbound Chinese coming up with packages. You'll see a lot more of that in the months ahead by these cities to attract the outbound Chinese.
Then what about those traditional tourist attractions in America, Europe, and you've already mentioned Southeast Asia? And would their share be grabbed away by some new destinations like those that have recently established or re-established diplomatic ties with China? Nauru, Solomon Islands.
Yeah, there's a possibility because the pool of tourists is fixed, right, at any given time. Mm. So, but if the destination increases and every destination will compete, of course, tourists will tend to visit newer destinations. If they have already been in the destination, they can always, wait until they visit new destinations and then return. But I think America, Europe are still attractive destinations for Chinese tourists, but it will take some time to recover until the economy is doing well, and also the relationship between China and this country improve, and they will still attract a lot of Chinese tourists, I'm sure.
To Harvey, Nauru and Solomon Islands, do you think they will become new hotspots for Chinese travelers, taking away some shares from America and Europe?
I think in the middle term, in the long term, that could be the case, because they have to further develop their tourism industry. But I want to emphasize that people have to feel safe and comfortable where they're going, whether it's in those countries or in Europe or America or in nearer to China. So I think it's a multi-factor question with multi-factor answers. So I hope that there's more two-way tourism, because people in China and those two countries have a special bond of friendship now and diplomatic relations and so on. I believe that the trend will be towards more bilateral visits. And I think that's a great thing. We need more tourism, because as we can meet people in other countries and see that they're just like everybody else, they're not demons or they're not enemies or whatever, that on a people-to-people level, that we are all the same. And I think tourism is what fosters that. It's a connection that we make, just like Belt and Road connects countries' economies. Tourism connects people, and people-to-people connectivity between China and other countries, between any countries, is crucial especially in our modern age of fast travel and far distance travel.
Then earlier this month, China's aviation regulator said it would push for a significant increase in direct flights with the U.S. So how effective do you expect this to help increase the number of Chinese travelers heading to the States, Harvey?
I think it'll make travel much more convenient. The only question is price, because flights are much more expensive still than before COVID. So if we can have more nonstops, if we can have more flights, if we can have more demand, I think that we'll have travel in many different directions. So yes, I think the travel regulator is going to do a great job, and that's going to be a very positive factor for travel, especially if the prices come down.
Gwen?
Again, I'm not the forecaster to put the modeling,
right.
But what we always have found with the aviation industry or and so forth is normally an increase and subject to other external or internal influences, that would be an indicator of more outbound Chinese. Because to my point earlier on, there was bottlenecks, which we've seen in Macau's reopening and Hong Kong's reopening in terms of labor and infrastructure, transportation modes and so forth. And that takes a lot of time to ramp up, getting airlines back on the tarmacs. And subject to any external, internal influences, I foresee if you put more getting back to pre-COVID-19 levels in terms of flight tickets and so forth, yes, that will also be a stimulus to more outbound Chinese. But to the point that Hanyin was making earlier and what we were saying is there's a price sensitivity to that too, because the Chinese outbound, particularly Generation Z and middle age and so forth, they're all got a lot of information sources that do price comparisons. So there is going to be a lot of competition between European cities and USA and Canada and many other destinations around the world. I think, you know, the competitive landscape has changed a little bit. And so for that reason, again, price is an issue, but also value and packages and so forth.
And Haiyan, do you see any, you know, factors impacting their willingness to go to the States, especially given the current geopolitical tensions between the two countries? Would that be a key factor?
I think you will see probably a push and pull factor into play, you know. So I think the increase of flight is try to pull some Chinese tourists, but at the same time, the geopolitics and also other factors is actually another factor. This will negatively influence Chinese tourists traveling to the U.S. Really, this depends on, you know, how this will play out. But in general, I think the increase of the flight between China and the U.S. will increase the Chinese tourists traveling to the U.S. First, there will be a lot of business activities going on between this country. Although these they are politics, but the business and the trade tourism or business tourism will continue to increase because, you know, the economic ties between China and the U.S. still quite strong, right? So I still see a positive trend, you know, in terms of tourism traveling from China to the U.S. And also Europe as well.
Right, fair enough. And ultimately, analysts expect China to retake its crown as the largest source market for foreign travel. But if those business operators seek some advice from you two experts, what would you say to them? I know you've already touched upon some of the trying to tackle the bottlenecks. If you have to give just one most important recipe, I would say, for those operators, what would you say when it comes to winning back Chinese tourists fast? Haiyan, please.
Okay, I think from my perspective, since I'm an economist, I will be mainly looking at improved quality and also provide the services with good value for money and also branding to the Chinese tourist, good branding, marketing, communication, positive messages, and using social media, especially Chinese social media, reach to China. So that's actually some of the things that the tourism business can do to attract more Chinese tourists.
All right, Glenn?
Yeah, I'm a tourism destination marketing guy too. So my area, of course, is in a marketing destination. So for that, I always say the image, how you portray the image, to the, and connecting that. I mean, I've done a lot of imaging research in China and understanding. So it has to connect with them without buying Chinese and their lifestyle and how, you know, those shifts. So I think within that marketing, I think a little bit of research, understanding these shifts in lifestyle, you know, during the COVID period, what we've mentioned on the show, and how to, it's not just the shopping, not just the food, but also the other experience that they will expect, and getting that portrayed out, whether that be on a campaign or some other type of marketing promotional drive.
Harvey?
I think several things. First, of course, excellent marketing campaigns. But behind marketing campaigns have to be true friendship, true welcoming. And countries have to make clear that they welcome Chinese people, that they respect Chinese people, that they have infrastructure for Chinese people, that Chinese people will be very welcome, and that they will have facilities that they'll feel comfortable with, whether it's food or certain amenities, whether it's the ability to watch CCTV from their hotel rooms and things like that. So I think it's a multi-pronged approach. But the bottom line for me is people have to be convinced that there's a true friendship, true safety, true being on the same level of equality and respect with each other. I think those are some of the things that are it's going to take. You can't just wave a magic wand and do this kind of thing. This is going to take a lot of effort, especially after the disruptions of COVID and also some of the political problems that we faced recently. We need to demonstrate more friendship, less hostility, if we're going to have more tourism, no matter where it goes and where it comes from.
Those operators in the States, they may say, we welcome Chinese people. It's just, you know, the government. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean exactly. So I think the people have to be behind it. And whatever the tourist operators say, it's not enough. So people have to know they're welcome in America or whatever. If a Chinese person wants to go to America, they have to know that they're welcome. It's not a bunch of slogans. It's not only a marketing campaign. And I want to give you a domestic example in China. It is in Harbin, where I was a couple years ago. Of course, Harbin's always been freezing at this time of year. And the ice sculptures have been there for many years, and they're beautiful. But now you have a huge amount of Chinese tourists and others visiting Harbin, despite all the negatives. Why? I think it's because people have been made welcome in Harbin. And I was really touched when I read the news that in Harbin, people, ordinary people, are reaching out to tourists by even giving tourists free rides to and from the ice sculpture displays and so on. I think when one person reaches out to others, this is worth billions of RMB and whatever currency you want to talk about, because it demonstrates true friendship, true camaraderie, and true people-to-people connectivity in the best possible way. So if you take America, you take Europe, for example, we need to see more examples of friendship and less examples of demonization and polarization and like that.
Thanks. And on that note, we've come to the end of our chat today. Many thanks to Glenn McCartney, Associate Professor in Integrated Resort and Tourism Management, University of Macau, Dr. Haiyan Song, Mr. and Mrs. Chan Chek Fu Professor in International Tourism, Associate Dean and Chair Professor, School of Hotel and Tourism Management, Hong Kong Polytechnic University, and Harvey Zoden, Senior Fellow at the Center for China and Globalization, for sharing your experiences and insights with us. The show is available on all major podcast platforms. If you have anything to say about the topic or the show, please email radio@cgtn.com. I'm Tian. Thank you for being with us. We'll chat again next week.
discover the realities and responses to our changing climate with Climate Watch. Uncover critical issues such as the Masai Mara's disrupted wildebeest migration and the drop in the Panama Canal's water levels. Delve into solutions for a sustainable future. Tune in to Climate Watch on your favorite podcast platform. Become more eco-conscious and take action to protect our planet.